I want to introduce the sermon this morning, which is on United Nations Sunday, with a video. There's innumerable videos about the United Nations and the work of the United Nations. And I just picked one that has to do with the new goals for sustainable development that all the countries of the United Nations have unanimously agreed to make goals for the next 15 years. So we'll introduce the sermon with a brief video.
This September, 193 countries will meet at the UN to adopt new global goals. These 17 goals provide a roadmap that will help the world achieve sustainable development. But what exactly is sustainable development, and how does it affect us? Sustainable development is development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. But what does that mean? Everyone understands the need to grow their economies, but not everyone takes into account the negatives that unbalanced economic growth can have on the environment and on people's well-being. It's time to change that by looking at the world in a different way. The Sustainable Development Goals will help us to do that. Sustainable development is about the big picture. It's about improving the lives of everyone, everywhere, and achieving all these things together. But it's also about the details. That means we want economies to grow, companies to thrive, and people to have decent work. We want to create new, innovative technologies, but not by harming the environment. We want everyone to have access to nutritious food, regardless of where they live. We want affordable and quality education for everybody, not just a few. We want freedom of speech, but we don't want that to mean violence. But how can we achieve all of this, and where do we even start? Well, the 17 goals will mean member states, alongside civil society stakeholders and major groups, will be working together for the next 15 years, looking at ways we can do business differently so that everyone gains. With these 17 global goals as our guide, we can achieve sustainable development and live in a world where people and planet benefit. But we have to act now. This is the time for global action. To find out how you can get involved and learn more about the goals, go to www.un.org/sustainable.
Okay, as already noted, today is United Nations Sunday. And we turn our thoughts towards one of the most important and hopeful developments in human history, the founding and the ongoing work of the United Nations. Unitarian Universalist congregations across the continent are encouraged to hold a Sunday service at this time of year. I think I should have rewritten that. I think it's congregations around the world. Anyway, this time of year commemorates the founding of the United Nations on October 24th, 1945. I was a member of a congregation in St. Catharines, and a member of that congregation was present at the founding of the United Nations in San Francisco. Our faith tradition has a close affinity with the goals and the organizing principles of the UN, and I'll get into that later. As I talk about the United Nations, I'm reminded that our staff and the leadership in our denomination and our faith tradition have recently been traumatized by an audit by the Canadian Revenue Agency. An audit to ensure that we're not crossing the line between religious charitable activity and political lobbying. I want to point out that in the case of the United Nations, we have nothing to fear. The goals of Unitarian Universalism and those of the UN are so closely linked that if we fail to lobby for the United Nations, we would be derelict in our religious tradition. I invite you to read with me the preamble to the UN Charter, which is in our hymnal. It's reading number 475. Now, you don't need to read this out loud, and you don't even need to read it at all, but I wanted you to know that it was in the hymnal, which says something about our faith, and I'll read it briefly. We, the people of the United Nations, determined to save succeeding generations from the scourges of war, which twice in our lifetime have brought untold sorrow to mankind, and to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights, in the dignity and the worth of the human person, in the equal rights of men and women, and of nations large and small, and to establish conditions under which justice and respect for the obligations arising from the treaties and other sources of international law can be maintained, and to promote social progress and better standards of life in larger freedom. And for these ends, to practice tolerance and to live together in peace with one another as good neighbors, and to unite our strength to maintain international peace and security, and to ensure by the acceptance of the principles of the institution of methods that armed force will not be used save in the common interest, and to employ international machinery for the promotion of economic and social advancement of all peoples. We have resolved to combine our efforts to accomplish these aims. See, the aspirations of the United Nations are being put into action every day, and it's difficult to overstate the importance of the UN in tackling global problems and humanity. The UN provides food for some 90 million people in 73 countries. It vaccinates 58% of the world's children, saving 2.5 million lives a year. It assists the over 65 million refugees in the world, people that are fleeing war and famine and persecution, the highest number of refugees since the Second World War. The United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change is the mechanism behind the international climate meetings that culminated in the climate agreement in Paris last year. The UN keeps peace with over 100,000 peacekeepers in uniform in 16 operations on four continents. It fights poverty, helping 370 million rural people achieve better lives in the last 30 years. It protects and promotes human rights on site and through some 80 treaties and declarations. It mobilizes $124 billion in humanitarian aid to help people affected by emergencies. It advances democracy, assisting some 30 countries a year in their elections. It promotes maternal health, saving the lives of 30 million women a year. The video that I used to introduce the sermon heralds the 17 Sustainable Development Goals recently adopted by all the member countries of the United Nations. These goals, with a 15-year time frame, follow the UN Millennial Goals, which covered the previous 15 years, 2000 to 2015. Significant progress was made on these goals. Not to say that the work remaining isn't huge, but it is important to acknowledge the progress made. So often our news, our reports, things we may hear about the United Nations are about the failures of our countries to unite to improve the world. But the Millennial Goals speak to what can be accomplished and what has been accomplished. I have some good news for you. Each one of the goals, I singled out just one item out of several that I could have talked about. There were 8 goals, and between 2000 and 2015. The first goal is to eradicate extreme poverty and hunger. Globally, the number of people living in extreme poverty has declined by more than half, falling from 1.9 billion in 1990 to 836 million in 2015. 836 million is a terrible number to be living in abject poverty, but it's been cut in half. Goal number 2, to achieve universal primary education. The number of out-of-school children in primary school age worldwide again has fallen by almost half to an estimated 57 million in 2015, down from 100 million in 2000. Goal number 3, to promote gender equality and empower women. Many more girls are now in school than compared with 15 years ago. The UN makes this claim. The developing regions as a whole have achieved the target to eliminate gender disparity in primary, secondary, and tertiary education. That's an amazing claim. Now, we hear about the countries where this hasn't happened. But fortunately, they still are a very small part of the world population. Southeast Asia in particular has amazing goals in equality in education. Goal number four is to reduce child mortality. The global under 5 mortality rate has declined by more than half, dropping from 90 to 43 deaths per 1,000 live births between 1990 and 2015. Goal 5 was to improve maternal health, and since 1990, the maternal mortality rate has declined by 45% worldwide, and most of the reduction has occurred since the year 2000. Goal 6 was to combat HIV/AIDS, malaria, and other diseases. And most of us are aware of the amazing advances in treating AIDS worldwide. But are you aware that the global incidence of malaria has fallen by an estimated 37%, and the mortality rate for malaria is down by 58%? Goal number 7 was to ensure environmental sustainability. The biggest threat to environmental sustainability is global climate change. And here the UN has taken the lead. Through the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, where our own Alan Clark has served, the international political response to climate change began at the Rio Earth Summit in 1992, where the Rio Convention included the adoption of the UN Framework on Climate Change. This convention set out a framework for action aimed at stabilizing atmospheric concentrations of greenhouse gases. And there was just wonderful news yesterday. The agreement to reduce HFCs, which will mitigate climate change. And goal number 8 was to develop a global partnership for development and official development assistance from developed countries. That assistance increased by 66% in real terms between 2000 and 2014, reaching $135 billion. The period of action of these 8 goals expired in 2015. And as described in the video, the countries of the UN have adopted 17 sustainability goals, for the 15-year period ahead of us. I mentioned the affinity between the goals of the United Nations and the goals of Unitarian Universalism. This body of cooperating nations, no matter how imperfect, represents the best hope we have for the vision of our 6th principle, which is the goal of world community with peace, justice, and liberty for all. Our vision as Unitarian Universalists challenges us to move beyond patriotism and ideas about what's good for Canada toward a vision for a better world for all. Unitarian Universalists and Unitarian Canadians were instrumental in the founding of the United Nations and in the drafting of its foundational documents. One of these Unitarian Universalist pioneers was John Peters Humphrey, born in 1905 in Hampton, New Brunswick. He became a lawyer, he taught at McGill, and in 1946 he joined the fledgling United Nations Human Rights Division. In December of 1948, as its principal author, Humphreys presented the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It was called the International Magna Carta of All Mankind. That was the illustrious beginning of Canada's deep relationship to the United Nations, and it has lasted decades and given Canada a well-earned reputation for effective diplomacy and commitment to international cooperation. The basic organizational structure of the United Nations is the same as the organizational structure of Unitarian Universalism. And that may explain a lot. Both are covenantal organizations of independent entities. Just as the CUC is an organization of independent congregations, so the UN is an organization of independent countries. We have found no better way to bring diverse groups of people into free and constructive dialogue. The founding nations, including Canada, entered a covenant together to end the scourge of war and to protect human rights and to promote economic and social advancement for all people. James Luther Adams, one of our most important UU religious thinkers of the past 100 years, wrote, "There is no such thing as a completely isolated being. Human beings are in relationship, and bonding is a characteristic feature of this relationship." Adams argued that religious liberalism must affirm the moral obligation to direct one's efforts toward the establishment of a just and loving community. It is this which makes the role of the prophet central and indispensable in liberalism. The last sermon that I did in this topic was in 2013. And then I warned about the dangers of the course of the Canadian government's policy vis-a-vis the United Nations. Since then, thankfully, much has changed, as demonstrated by the speech of our Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to the General Assembly of the UN in September 20th of this year. Our previous Prime Minister chose not to speak to the General Assembly for the 2 years preceding, or 2012 and 2013, both. So, as I near the end of this sermon, I'd like to focus our congregation on a special opportunity that we have to support the work of the United Nations. I've mentioned the unique nature of our representation at the United Nations through the Unitarian Universalist United Nations Office, currently led by Bruce Knox. The UUUNO is a unique organization at the United Nations representing Unitarian Universalism. It's supported by both the UUA and the CUC. And we have a full-time staff at the United Nations who have been very active promoting the values of Unitarian Universalism amongst the states at the United Nations. And it's been an effective body. The UUUNO encourages all UU congregations to select an envoy who will receive information on the activities of the UUUNO and act as the liaison between the congregation and that office. And for years, Valerie Chapman, supported by Colin, has been our UUUNO envoy. Under Valerie's leadership, the Universalist Unitarian Church of Halifax received the prestigious Blue Ribbon Award from the UUUNO every year for many years. And I meant to go and count how many plaques we have, but I failed to do that this morning. 3 or 4, at least. So this morning, we're going to be passing the flag from Valerie to Martha Wilson. Martha has agreed to be our new UUUNO. If you would like to come forward.
I know that sometimes what happens in the church can seem opaque to people who are wondering, why is that person doing that? And so I wanted to let you know how it came about that my family got involved with this. A few years ago, Valerie said that there was no youth envoy at our church and that she would love to have a youth envoy. So after that, I went and said, "Valerie, my daughter Jane would like to be the youth envoy," which was not true. But Valerie said that would be great, and so Jane was pressed into service, and I've been helping her the last couple of years with planning her activities and talks. And so Valerie asked me to take over for her, and I said I would be happy to do that. So I want you to know, I feel I've been somewhat too visible in the congregation lately. I did a sermon this summer and I'm the membership chair. I want you to know that when an opportunity comes, even if it's for someone in your family, you can kind of press them into service and then get more fully incorporated into the life of the church. And I want to say how inspiring Valerie has been in this role. And from the time I joined the church 7 years ago, she's stressed every year the importance of the UN and the great work they do. Thank you, Valerie, so much.
So the UUUNO, as has been pointed out, recognizes the position of youth envoy for a person of high school age or close thereto. And they encourage congregations actually to form multi-generational envoy teams. So we have the core here of a very, potentially very vibrant envoy team. You've heard this morning about, I hope you've been a little inspired about the work that the United Nations does and how closely their work parallels our aspirations as a faith tradition. So I hope you'll talk to Martha and Jane, and that there may be members of this congregation that come forward and say, I'd be willing to be part of that envoy team. It is not an onerous task. It's important work. But in that position, you get to learn directly from our office at the UUUNO what's happening at the United Nations, how it's affecting people around the world, how it relates to our faith tradition. You can translate that and bring that news to the congregation through our newsletter, through our other announcements, through this service, which will be held this time next year. And hopefully I'll step down from leading the service next year, and our envoy committee will take over for that. So I leave that hope with you. May it be so. And amen.